Welcome to Cybersecurity Where You Are, the Center for Internet Security's podcast. I'm Sean Atkinson, CISO at CIS.
And I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist at CIS. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we're online at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or running a state or local government.
So join us on Wednesdays as we discuss trends and threats, explore security best practices, and interview experts in the industry.
Together, we'll clarify these issues, creating confidence in the connected world. Well, welcome back to the Center for Internet Security's podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm hosting solo today. I'm Tony Sager, Senior Vice President and Chief Evangelist for CIS. And very excited to have a couple of guests on here from our internal team, folks that you don't often see in our best practices or operations, but contribute mightily to the successful operation of the Center for Internet Security. First, let me introduce Angelo Marcatullio, our head of IT. Angelo, could you introduce yourself to the audience and give them a little taste of what your day is like?
Sure. Great to be here, Tony. I am the Chief Information Officer at the Center for Internet Security. I joined as an employee in August of 2016, but actually started as a consultant with CIS when the MSISAC first joined CIS. My consulting firm was hired back in February, March of 2011 to come in and help set up some of their initial infrastructure.
Yeah, I forget your history went back that far. So we'll explore that maybe in a question or so upcoming here. And Stephanie Gass, could you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie Gass. I'm the Senior Director of Information Security for CIS. I actually started in early 2019 as a Senior Information Security Auditor and have since kind of grown my role within the organization with the responsibilities from the switch to overseeing the information security program.
Yeah, great. And welcome again to the show. So Angela, let's go back to your history a little bit here. So you've been through two of the major transitions that have constituted the history of the company. One is the addition of the ISAC, and then later the addition of the controls as a business model. And now you're right in the middle of, as an executive, where we're going now. But tell me what you saw as a contractor. And then when you came on board, sort of what was different? And you must have seen something you liked to have joined us back then.
Absolutely. So, as a contractor, as a consultant, my background is I was working as an employee in, large IT services organizations, and then started my own consulting firm. And one of the aspects of consulting that I liked was you were hired to do a very specific job, right? So when I started on some of the projects at CIS, there were very specific needs, and the organization had very clear goals of what they needed to do, what their short, medium, and long-term plan was. So that was very appealing. What you don't get an opportunity to do as a consultant is, and this was really as I moved through both being an employee and then running my own firm, you're not typically involved in the early decision making, right? You're hired to do a job, but the path, the expectations had already been set. And one of the things that I really had become interested in was setting those goals and being part of a team, the other leaders in the organization, setting strategic priorities and being in the room. And the only way you could do that is to actually be an employee. So, after a while, I started, thinking about, were there opportunities for me to actually shift from being a consultant and move into an employee role? One of the stories I like to tell that really had a profound effect on me and really changed my view of CIS is very early on. I was in the CIS offices, doing something, working with the CIS team, and a gentleman who I'd never met before walks up to me. He introduces himself and he says, "Hi, I'm Tom Duffy. I'm the head of the MSISAC. I've heard you've been doing really good things for us, and I just wanted to come over and say thank you." Now, in 20 years of consulting, I don't think that had ever happened before. And, that was really a meaningful event in my professional life. So when an opportunity, and as I mentioned, in 2016 became available to join CIS as employee, I gave it some serious thought. I always figured, hey, if it doesn't work out, I can always just go back to consultant. And, almost 9 years later, I'm still here. I love it as much today as I did, in the early days. Seeing a lot of growth, as you said, Tony, the MSI SAC, bringing that in, and really, and then I think that was something that I had, a lot of experience is taking not only building technology, but then putting it into operations and all of the, maybe the soft skills about, putting a production application, as everybody probably knows, we have a 24/7 security operations center. We have very SLAs, but even we like to do better than our SLAs. So being careless with things was not an option. Saying, oh well, it might go down, but we'll fix it, when we come in the next morning. And those are the types of things that I had, as I mentioned, close to 20 years of experience. And, and then, bringing in the controls, really a different view, and certainly something that Stephanie can talk more specifically about. But, instead of looking at, security from, an application or a server perspective, you're now looking at it from a corporate perspective. And what are those best practices that should be applied, and what, through the introduction of the implementation groups, what those priorities should be.
No, number one, a great anecdote about Tom Duffy. And I think there's always been, been associated with the company since when I was still in government, and when it was one employee, and as a full-time employee since 2015. But there's always been a kind of a neat atmosphere, right? A tone of conversation, a service-oriented company. I think Tom was, one of the creators of that and carriers of that message there. But also your point about being involved in strategy and the leadership, in a modern economy, right? There is no business without IT,
right?
And therefore, IT and IT security are, hand in hand with corporate strategy. If you can't execute it through IT, and do it in a way that both creates confidence and inspires it, then there is nothing, there is no business. And so we'll come back to that, because I think that's a dilemma that many companies face, is how do you do this? You can't think of the business, then we'll make sure we got some IT underneath to make it all work.
That's
inconceivable anymore. But Stephanie, you came on also at a different, an important time, and Angelo hinted at it, when we were, I think I would describe it as moving from three business units that, cheerfully were brought together, each independently doing good things, but not really as a coherent whole, but then rethinking ourselves as an integrated whole. That is, how each of these pieces work. Are we using the same advice that we give to others? Do we sort of build our own company from these pieces into something that's coherent? And a lot of this is around rethinking data and strategy and policy and bringing that all together, right? So, and so we went from kind of a one-man operation to a real team there. And I think you were the pioneer on that team. So tell me a little bit about your experience, what you saw as you came on board, and how you did bring those things together.
So when I came on board in 2019, there was actually only one person in the security department, and that was Sean Atkinson. And I think he had been here maybe a year when I came on. And so it was really trying to establish that governance around security and what does it look like for CIS. We had very unique requirements, right? Working with the MSI SAC, we had requirements. We also had our own requirements for the members and what does that look like from a global perspective. So not only were we dealing very specifically with the MSI SAC, but we were also just trying to understand what our global impact was and what security requirements were. And as an organization, as you mentioned, Tony, I think that's when we started to kind of realize we're not three separate entities, and we started to merge together. So being able to look at a holistic perspective and say, okay, where do I have the most data? What is this data, and who has access to this data? A lot of it is about understanding what data it is and really understanding and defining what our governance program as a whole looked like. So that, I would say, was be my focus for like the first year or so was understanding your governance. What are the risks to the organization? What does it look like on a global level? What does it look like, you know, locally? We were all still working in the office. I think at that time we were just over 100 people. So it was still relatively small. I know not as small as others, but it was still, I thought it's actually one of the smallest organizations I've been at. So kind of building, what does that look like? What does your security program look like from the ground up? We had some high level documents in place. Sean had a vision, and it was kind of my goal and role to implement that vision. And that's, you know, getting us aligned to ISO 27001 for the private sector. We have on the global level, a lot of global organizations want to see ISO 27001. From a US perspective, a lot of them want to see SOC 2. So what does it take to get our organization aligned to both SOC 2 and ISO, as well as like combining the technical controls that are the CIS controls? So it was trying to look at all those frameworks, see what the commonalities were, see where the gaps were. And then on top of all of that, right, with the MSISAC, we also had to worry about whether or not we were aligning with NIST 800-171 for controlled and classified information. And so that was really interesting, trying to take three separate organizations in the organization and say, hey, let's start looking at this holistically and not segregating all these pieces out, because when you segregate them out, it actually makes it harder to manage in the long run. You can put specific controls on certain applications, but if you don't have a holistic vision or goal of what it looks like, it's really hard to start maintaining a successful isolated environment without, you know, especially when we're becoming a larger organization, we were growing, we were looking to expand our global footprint. Like, what does that look like and what does that mean? So for me, it was an interesting time and to watch how our security program grew.
Yeah. And I think one of the things you had to deal with, Stephanie, which as an observer here, you know, you have, again, we were formed from basically three parts. And every part has a very strong sense of mission, is very successful on its own, and is convinced that the way they, for example, manage data, deal with this relationship is the right way. And your job is to have a larger perspective, right? To bring that into and recognize we're serving a greater set of customers than any one of the three serves. And therefore, you have to be aware of all this, of these, what are their expectations? So, you know, we use that tagline, creating confidence in a connected world, which is, I really like that tagline. But before we get to do that, we have to create confidence in us, right? That Correct. We will be responsible, that we will be transparent, that we will use recognized machinery, like ISO, you mentioned, to project that, right? To create that confidence and project it outwards. Are there any other things like that that you sort of... What was early on your list of things that you had to do to create that confidence?
On the to-do list, it was really understanding our requirements. GDPR came into play, I think, a year prior to that. So we had GDPR, right? That was something I think...
Just GDPR, yes.
Yeah, I'll put it that way. GDPR is big in and of itself is understanding that. And then from there, the privacy realm grew. So as we're trying to build our original security, you know, foundation, we also had to start shifting to privacy as well, because states brought in their privacies, other countries brought in their privacy requirements. There were a lot there. So I think there were a lot of challenges in one, understanding what our governance needed to look like. And then from there, communicating it out, a lot of it in the early stages was kind of, I worked with IT significantly. So Angelo's team, we worked very hard to kind of understand what controls we can put in place, what we can't put in place, what does compensating controls look like. And we kind of really built that bridge between IT and security, I think, in CIS through that. So understanding the programs, the controls, what we can and can't do. And then from there, it was working with the various business units. So I would say that it was kind of a stepped approach based on the business units and the teams within the units that we would work directly with more often than not. So building those, creating out, I would kind of consider them security champions. Every team, we have several on the IT team that we consider security champions that really kind of help us when we need to promote any new changes, whether it's in the regulatory environment or it's a new contractual requirement, whatever the case may be, is, you know, who can we go to coordinate with and see where we can get that implemented.
Yeah. And Tony, let me just add, you know, my guidance to my team always was the CISO, the information security organization, they are our partners. We need to work hand in hand with them and, you know, really, you know, buy into the mission, the goals. I think having the structure of ISO 27001, SOC 2, those frameworks really, you know, gave people a roadmap. And while there was some, you know, as I think would be normally expected, you know, some friction in the very, very beginning, once we worked through the process and we had some governance around it, it was a lot of work. I think it's, I don't know the statistics, but I'd have to imagine it's somewhat unusual for a company our size to have SOC 2, ISO 27001. You know, working as partners, we were able to do that. And, you know, through Stephanie and Sean's, you know, not only their capabilities, but their approach, their personalities really made it a project that we really bought into.
Yeah, you know, all of this is happening right at a time of really rapid growth. Stephanie, I didn't realize. Yeah, so you were about 100 people when you came on board?
Just slightly over, yeah.
Yeah, so we've only grown by 5 times or something like that.
Right.
But it's so it can feel chaotic. At the same time, there's opportunity. You know, we grow from a person or two that worries all the security and policy, right? So you're able to sort of know everybody. Stephanie, I'm like you. I've worked in large, massive organizations where the policy people are like in a different building and, you know, they're lobbing things back and forth, you know, paper and technology at each other from the IT folks. And it's hard to build the right kind of relationships. And you were able to sort of build as we grew, right? Find the champions and create that synergy there. And it's so much a part of what we are. We are a security company, and yet we are a modern IT security company. And I think that we have to do both. But Angela, let's come back to you and your role in strategy, right? So one thing, you get to see the board in action, right? What are their expectations? You're a member of the senior leadership team in terms of how much do we invest? And tell the audience a little bit about your role in that and how you negotiate or maneuver your way through. So the board is, not many boards have as much security experience, I think, as the board that we have. And so their expectations are high, right? And reputational things are really important to them. So you've got to manage that. At the same time, we have to be able to present it. And I know Sean and Stephanie spend a lot of time, you know, how do we characterize our risk, right? How do we sort of take the intuition of the board and translate that into specifics that help them. But talk about your role as a member of our executive team and the strategy and how all that interplays.
Sure. So you mentioned the key word there, Tony, and that's risk, right? The board is very interested in understanding the risk profile of, you know, the various initiatives that we either have planned or are in the process of planning. What we have, you know, up and running today. You're exactly right. We have a very knowledgeable board in the sense of cybersecurity. So you need to be prepared. And one thing is for sure, if you don't know the answer, that's okay. Just say, I'll get back to you, but don't try to, you know, make it up because they'll know. And then you'll lose, you know, you'll lose their confidence. So I think that's good advice in any situation, but particularly when dealing with a board of directors. The board, from my perspective, you know, is very interested in understanding how we as an organization are actually achieving our mission. And one area that I help with that is by providing data to inform decisions and inform conversations. And, you know, that is something that my team, whether it is through data analysis or, you know, understanding, you know, downloads of the controls, downloads of the benchmarks, you know, my organization working obviously with the marketing team and the sales team, you know, we have to be able to provide that data in a easily, but in an understandable manner to inform decision making.
You know, that's one of the things that has really, I think has changed. You know, we had essentially no machinery for gathering data, you know, not that long ago, and being in a position to, you know, I was involved with the startup of the controls, right? And it was just sort of mirrored everywhere, downloaded everywhere. And it was all goodness and light, that, you know, it's all nice, but then it's unmanageable. You have no idea who's using it, in what sector, in what country, and you have no way to kind of use that information. And we built all that impressive machinery, I think, to help us. I guess that's what strikes me. And Stephanie, I'd appreciate your opinion on this. You know, we have, I think, as near as I could tell, successfully integrated this discussion of security risk as an equal partner to business risk. You know, that is, you know, does this make sense from a business perspective? Is there opportunity here? Is there need here for the security services and products we produce? And that goes hand in hand with the, what is our ability to project that, right? To create it safely, transparently, with confidence, and to make it available. And so you do a lot of the, I know, real work behind the scenes to prepare for that conversation with the board to put risk in perspective. Is that a fair way to, or can you give me a little insight into that, how that process works?
Yeah, so a lot of it is understanding what's coming down the pipeline within the organization, right? We have a lot of projects ongoing all the time, and being able to get a seat at the table. It all comes down to whether or not you have a seat at the table. I do have the pleasure of sitting in on the Board of Directors Risk Committee meeting, which kind of helps me understand their mindset and what they're looking at when they're trying to understand the risks in the organization. So I do have that ability. And when we have projects that come down, it's being able to get a seat at the table, understanding the board's risk appetite and what they're looking for as an organization for CIS, you know, what do they want to see us accomplish? And then how can we communicate that out to the teams, right? It's all about working with the teams. We have security when it's baked in at the beginning, it's a lot easier. It's part of the process. We do it from the beginning with the vendors, doing the risk assessments with our vendors. That's part of our scope as well. Understanding any data concerns, data elements. So we have the data governance piece, understanding that. And then what does it look like from a technical perspective with controls? So we have lots of different layers that we go through on the security team. But from my perspective, I think I have the benefit that most people don't have is sitting in those meetings and understanding what the actual risks are for the organization and what's top of mind to our leadership.
Yeah, and I think that's a great point. We are, I think, very, again, as a security company, we're very conscious of that and make it an equal partner to any discussion of business that we have to think about.
Yeah, and Tony, one thing I'd add to what Stephanie said is, you know, it is not uncommon for me or someone on my team to, you know, talk about a particular risk and how it affects our business operations, and to have a conversation about, well, can we modify the risk but maybe meet the needs of the risk by some other mechanism, some other type of control, where we can also help the business but still address the risk at an appropriate level.
Yes.
No. Yeah. Absolutely.
And with that, we'll be right back after this quick break.
Are you a U.S. state, local, tribal, or territorial government?
If so, you know just how difficult cyber defense can get.
You're the frontline defense against cyber threats, yet you don't have the shiny tools, big budget, or skilled talent of an enterprise.
Well, guess what? You don't need them.
You do need a community of like-minded folks to unlock the power of collective cybersecurity.
And that's the superpower of the Multi-State Information Sharing and Analysis Center.
The multi-state ISAC provides cyber underserved organizations with protections they otherwise couldn't afford at a price that works for them.
But it's more than just access to services. It's access to a community of peers where your participation protects them and theirs protects you.
Not to mention access to the 24/7/365 CIS Security Operations Center as your full-time public sector cybersecurity partner.
Available as a single organization or state or territory-wide option, the MSISAC membership provides threat intelligence, monitoring, and more to fortify your cyber defense.
Become a member today by visiting cisecurity.org/ms-isac.
Thank you, and let's jump back into the episode.
So let me switch gears here for you, Andrew, because one of the things that fascinated me was our transition in March or so of 2020 from a basically fixed plant traditional company to a work from home one. And you were right in the middle of that. And as an observer, I am astounded by how well it went, to be honest. And it felt like, over a weekend, that's almost literally what happened. There were lots of loose ends and things to fix it, but it's just an amazingly smooth transition. So I'd love to get any behind the scenes perspective you have you care to share, because I suspect that what I've often said is anything that could have happened that quickly, so fundamental to business operation, had to be preceded by a year's worth of hard work. It couldn't have happened otherwise. But go ahead and give me a.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I have to give all the credit to my team. Without question, both the work that they had done in advance, the work they did, the few days leading up and the few days during the transition allowed that to happen. Now, one of the things I learned from, my years of consulting is when you build infrastructure, you don't want to build it for sort of the smallest case scenario, the lowest load. You want to build for growth. And that had been one of the things that we had been doing. So when we first went, and things have changed, dramatically over the time, but March of 2000, 2020, our way for remote access was through a virtual desktop environment. So when we built that environment, we built it with extra capacity. So through having that extra capacity, through the team being able to configure that environment to support the load of the full company, plus just a lot of people working, many hours, the week before and doing that, we were able to do it. But again, I have to give all the credit to my team. They really, everything they'd done before and, during that transition, they really just were outstanding.
Yeah, Stephanie, you must have had a perspective on this also, because again, we had not designed ourselves, right, policy-wise, security-wise, to be a work-from-home company. So what did you see during that time period? And you were fairly new at that point, right?
Yeah, so that was about a year into my career at CIS. And ironically, I was on vacation and I came back to a remote environment.
Excellent.
But leading up to that, right, I think what helped is, Angelo's team did a great job, honestly, getting everybody what they needed for their environments at home. And I also think being able to have that governance, that security governance in place, with us being able to get a lot of those controls implemented, it made the transition a lot easier, because now we had tracking mechanisms, we had ways to evaluate our security, we understood what the risks were. Obviously, risks change and modify over time. And this was a new risk, right, is work from home. What does that look like? And how do we make sure, people were very big on paper still? And how do you transition them from that paper mindset to digital? And so there were a lot of things to consider. But I think we were very successful because we had that governance around security identified. It was top of mind for everybody because we had just spent a year with the IT working on controls and what does it look like. And I think that was all really great and helped us be successful in the transition to a work from home environment.
Yeah, I think that's a critical point in that in some sense, we knew what risks we were taking because of the homework done, both in IT and in policy and understanding our environment, where our data is. And it allows you then to adapt your risk to the circumstances, to say, as we make this transition, you know, what are the things that we need to do? We know where things are. We know who is responsible for each asset, et cetera, all that kind of stuff. So I think that, to me, again, speaks really well to the work that, that both the teams have done. And there's another indicator, right? You can't talk about the future of a business without it being integral to IT and security really embedded in that. And Stephanie, any perspective that you would offer or advice for those that are just starting on their security journey?
Yeah, sure. I think the CIS controls are a great place to start from a technical perspective. I also think when you're looking at it holistically, you need to look at what is your risk. And from that, you know, to build that risk profile, you need to understand the governance that you have. What do you have for an organization that you need to align to? Because there can be like legal ramifications, there can be breaches. We want to understand what does our governance and our requirements look like. Then it's really kind of understanding our people and who do we have on our teams and understanding their capabilities and processes, right, that they're undergoing, as well as the ability to know exactly what your crown jewels are as an organization. So when you have your governance, your people, and your crown jewels, you can really build out that holistic risk profile for the organization.
Yeah, it's a great description, Stephanie. And holistic's the right answer, right? Which you can't just slap on a few pounds of security onto a business idea. You have to think of them together, which is, and, you know, people think technology is magic. You know, we'll just get some more of that stuff. But really, if you can't govern, you know, the management of the assets, the who's responsible for what, you know, how do things happen, then it doesn't matter. IT is, you know, is really not there to serve the business very well. So I think that ties that together. And again, kudos to you both. I think we've done a good job of that at CIS, both. Managing rapid technology growth, but doing it in a way that addresses those governance issues and the management of all this as a fundamental core asset for the success of the mission that we're trying to project. So well done to you both. Okay, so as we approach the end of our time here, Angelo, any last thought that you'd care to leave with the reader, either to emphasize something or something we did not bring up in this episode?
Sure. You know, technology will only take you so far. I think your greatest asset are your employees, well-trained, continuously trained, you know, employees not, you know, trained not to click that phishing link in an email. And also encourage employees to report any unusual activity they see. So if you're a salesperson and you see a failed login to your customer relationship management system on a weekend at 2 a.m. in the morning, reach out to them. Hey, was that really you or was there something else going on here? I think those are very critical aspects to an overall security program within a company.
All right. Good news. There's still work for the human sensors in this equation. I appreciate it. Stephanie, how about you? Any last thought you'd care to leave with the audience?
The collaboration, building those relationships within the various business units, that's actually been really key for us. As Angelo's talked about through this, we've had a very close working relationship, our teams together, and it's just finding those champions that are in the different areas within your organization. Security shouldn't be done in a silo. It should be done with the organization as a whole. So I really think that the collaboration piece is key to being successful as well.
You know, great points. And I think, again, give you both and the folks that you represent, you know, great kudos for the work that you've done here. We haven't fallen into the usual traps of thinking of these as separate things, but really managing them as core to the success of the mission that we have here at CIS. So with that, we'll wrap up another fun episode of Cybersecurity Where You Are. Subscribe to us in all the usual ways, and we're always open to your suggestions for guests and for topics. So with that, we'll wrap it up, and I look forward to seeing you all next time, next episode of Cybersecurity Where You Are. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast today.
The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS.
Tune in on Wednesdays for a new episode. And in the meantime, visit our website at cisecurity.org.
Together, we'll continue our efforts of creating confidence in the connected world.